Greetings to each one this morning. Trust we were rejoicing in God and what He has done for us and is doing for us. Before going to the message, I was asked by the food committee to make several announcements. One was that while they're preparing before lunch, that everybody stays in the auditorium. And then once they're ready, then have your families, you're going to sit by families in there, your little children. So, but like I suppose like the ones, the boys that sit by themselves can be able to eat by themselves in there too. I didn't ask, but I figure that's the way it is. And then also, well, that was, I guess that was it. Seems to me there was something else. I forgot what it was.
That silent prayer?
No, it wasn't that. George, did I say what? Tell what you told me to say. Okay, that's what I wanted to know if I did or not. Okay, going to the message. This morning, if you remember correctly, last time I preached on the Sermon on the Mount, I believe it was last time, and blessed are the poor in spirit, Matthew 5. And now today I want to take I'd like to take the next one, Matthew 5, verse 4. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Before we go into that too much, the verse preceding this was, blessed are the poor in spirit. And if you remember, we decided then that the poor in spirit is neither the wealthy or the rich or the those in poverty that keeps people out of the kingdom, but it is pride. So that the poor in spirit are not proud in spirit. They know that within themselves, in all people, are there a few, if any, spiritual proud, any spiritual resources. In other words, they know that within themselves there's very few spiritual resources. We have to recognize, to be spiritually poor, we have to recognize we need help from above. And that as desperately as we need the kingdom of heaven, you know, it says, I think, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Nobody else ever gets it for the simple reason that they don't want it. Just the poor in spirit. So, let's, I guess, one person put it that, his kingdom, in other words, is upon anybody. He doesn't, God does not force anybody his kingdom upon anybody, but that gives it to all who know they are losers without him and humbly seek his help. So I believe that was the message on the Sermon on the Mount, and that was what he was speaking to at there at that day. Okay, going on. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. There's several other verses that I thought I would read maybe. One is in Isaiah 61:2, that says, speaks about mourn. To proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn. Okay, what was mourning? You know, I often thought of that growing up. I thought, now what do they mean? Someone that mourned. Now over in Romania, when someone died, I don't know if they hired the mourners or not, but it sure looked like it. And there was, it reminded me of the scripture where it says wailing and mourning. But anyway, mourning is expressed by weeping. And then also in by a loud lamentation. In Ruth it speaks of, and Samuel also. And then sometimes in the Jewish culture, by disfigurement of the person as rendering the clothes and wearing sackcloth, or shaving the head and plucking out the hair of the head or the beard. That was a sign of mourning. Or neglect of a person, or the removal of ornaments. They wore ornaments at that time, and then if someone was in mourning, they would take those ornaments off. And then also in we can read in the New Testament about fasting, and also in covering the upper lip. I suppose they, I don't know what they took their finger up, covered their upper lip is the way that they showed they were in mourning. Or in Jeremiah 16:6-7, cutting the flesh. And also in sitting in silence. There's different ways they mourn. And I had to think, now Jesus was saying, blessed are they that mourn. Now what does that mean? What do you think that means? Why does God want people to mourn? You know, religion is often sober enough. I know of a story I probably told some of, but it's a story of a man that went to the message to church, and he heard all about this, you know, being sober and not, and the long faces and so on. Then he went home and went out in the barn, and his donkey was out there in the stall. And he said that's the first Christian he saw all day, the long face. You know, and that isn't that the case? We Christians, we're not necessarily have to walk around with a long face, do we? I mean, maybe, I believe that some people do. And I believe probably the scribes and Pharisees probably did some, you know, walk around with long faces so they could tell the people something was going on. Did God really mean that we should cry about something? Does it help? How are you going to get in the kingdom? By crying. And we can go around and around in those circles, and finally we'll just have to accept. Finally, we have to accept the fact that we have to do something. So you know, in mourning, it's more. I believe what Jesus speaks is mourning is more than just mourning. You have to do something about it. You can cry about something all you want. And I don't know, it doesn't necessarily, I don't believe it necessarily, mourning necessarily is tears all the time. And not, is tears necessarily mourning? But it could be. But strange as the Beatitudes says you must mourn, you know, I believe it's what a mourner is, one who expresses a deep concern. I think the loss of a loved one and often bring tears. But if we are truly burdened by something, if we would use the word burdened too lightly, or mourning, And I've wondered about this. Maybe, you know, it's pretty easy to say, I have a burden for this or for that, isn't it? You know, and I... How easy is it for us to express that, to just say that and go on, and maybe that's the last thought we have about that. But Jesus said, blessed are they that mourn. But if I believe if we truly are burdened about something, we are saddened. We are saddened about it. And maybe a form of mourning is just being saddened. And with this in mind, let's try to keep in mind what Jesus meant by mourning. You know, he has already said in the first part that you have to be spiritually poor. And then now he's saying, you know, now he's saying that the blessed are they that mourn. And I had to wonder already, all those people, you know, hearing this, you know, how they understood that. Yeah, I suppose, I don't know, but I question if they really understood it at that time. But later on, maybe they did. But it's evident that just mourning isn't enough. And you know, sometimes some people recognize that the world's in bad shape. And they recognize the fact that they are part of the world and they're in bad shape too. But they're not doing anything about it. And they might even have tears about it. You know, that really isn't mourning. You know, if someone might speak about it and cry some, but what does he do about it? You know, even if he admits that there's something wrong with his own life, and he's one of the world. You know, I was convicted in studying about this and about being burdened. There's a man up at the Farm Service. You probably know him, Donald. I don't know if you know Donald. He used to work in the tire shop back there, and now he's in the front of the office. But he isn't very good health-wise. And I've spoken to him. To me, he's got very little time to live with all everything that's the matter with him and all the medicine that he's taking. And I spoke to him several times about his soul, and he says, yes. Yes, he knows. He knows that. I asked him just the other day, I asked him, well, do you know how to get right with God? And he said, yes. Yes, I know. He said they started going to church, but he admitted that he isn't necessarily right with God. But then I had to think, well, how often does that soul there really burden my heart? Am I burdened enough? Or I pray for that man when I think, you know, not just when I think of, but am I burdened or am I saddened by the fact that here is his soul at kingdom's door and I don't know if he's going to make it or not. If he dies now, he's not ready. He's going to go to hell. You know, so how much, what is my burden? Or what? And that's what I had to think of in mourning. You know, I wonder if mourning is more the fact Jesus saying that those that really care, those that really are saddened, and you have a burden for something, and you do something. Some of the things you could do maybe is pray and fast. I had to think of an example in the Bible of Luke 7:37. You know the example about the woman that came to wash Jesus' feet? The thought is that's the same woman that had come to Jesus, that the scribes and Pharisees had brought to Jesus that was in adultery. And Jesus, And they asked Jesus, you know, the law says that she should be stoned. What do you say? Jesus wrote on the ground several times, and then when he got up, well, there was nobody there but her. No, he said, "He that is without sin cast the first stone." And then when he looked up again, and then there was nobody there but her. And then she said, then he said, "Does no man condemn thee?" She said, "No, no man." Then he said, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." And then later, and I, you know, it doesn't say that at that point that Mary, doesn't say what happened anyway. But later on, in Luke 7:37, "And behold, a woman in the city which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat at the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment." The next verse, "and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with ointment." You know, this is thought to be the same woman, Mary Magdalene, the same, you know, and I had to think, she was done with herself. You know, she was completely done. She came to Jesus in essence saying, "I don't have the answers. I don't know, but you know. I can't help myself, but you can." You know, and then also, I believe it's a picture of a spiritual poor person was that woman that was there washing Jesus' feet. And then, and if it was Mary Magdalene, well, we could see that Jesus, later on we could read that Jesus enjoyed spending time there in that home with Lazarus and spent much time there. And anyway, it says that she broke that alabaster box ointment on his feet, and then there was critical ones saying that, couldn't that have been sold, you know, for someone else? But Jesus said, "Let her alone." Jesus, I think, wanted that. Did he want it because the ointment was expensive? Well, in one sense, I believe he did. He wants you and I, to pour out our life to him. All our own ideas, our own thoughts, our own prejudices, and everything in our life that hinders. He wants, and it's going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive for you and for me. It's going to cost us everything. To be a child of God, it's going to cost us everything. And there was the picture of that woman, that she was done with herself. Okay. And she was truly comforted, and I believe that she enjoyed Jesus after that. And Jesus didn't condemn her for that. Now, there's one story I was going to go into the next one, but I don't know if I have. I don't think I'm going to because of time. But there's one story that I thought of, I wanted to read about mourning. And I think we can identify with it too. It's about, I want you to listen to, you know, laughing sometimes. We think that people are having fun. And just because someone cries doesn't really mean they're mourning either. Doesn't mean they're real sad. So, but here's a story I thought that would fit in there. And I believe that it's easy for us before I go into this story, it was there was a the man that wrote this story was Elmo Stahl. And he was a man that, this was why I was a boy yet, he was out western Canada, him and his brothers for some reason, and then they went to visit someplace, and he said the man, there was something that was a little humorous where they visited, as an older man, and they chuckled a little bit. And the man told them, he reproved them and said, "You don't laugh. He doesn't think Jesus laughed. This, you know, you ought to be serious in life. You ought to be serious." But anyway, I think it is easy for us to recognize the two extremes. You know, one being too sober and one being too lighthearted. I believe, here he said, many of the petty cares and troubles of daily life seem less vexing if we are able to laugh. Sometimes when we make a stupid blunder, according to Solomon, laughter may even make us healthier. For he says, a merry heart does good like medicine. Proverbs 17:22. Also, many people who are quick to be hurt and take offense at the slightest insult would be better if they could learn to laugh a little and forget it. I guess that, you know, is human. And all of us should strive to remain childlike enough to laugh at the many things God put here for us to enjoy. You know, and he just wrote down some, the capers of a colt, or sometimes he's, and Elmo was the type of person, he wasn't one of the, if I remember him right, he didn't laugh out loud. He chuckled a little bit. But he could see a lot of humor in a lot of things. And he could write it, put it on paper. And one time, I remember him telling the story that he saw about this sparrow was trying to get an 8-inch piece of straw into a 4-inch hole. He said that thing was up there, and he put it one way and stuck it in there, and it didn't go in. And then he brought it out again, you know, and put it the other way and stuck it in. And he just didn't work. He said he worked for the longest time trying to get that thing in there, but he never did. And he thought, and it was just humorous. And I believe he's saying here that God does, you know, God does things, did create things that are a little humorous. But anyway, he brings out the fact that several years ago, I heard of a story that usually comes back to my mind whenever I meet a person who laughs too loudly and too much. As I remember the story, a middle-aged man had an appointment one day to see a psychiatrist. The man was deeply troubled, and he said to the psychiatrist, "Doctor, I'm not happy. I sure hope you can help me. I'm so unhappy and depressed all the time. I don't know what to do." The psychiatrist did his best to find out what was wrong with the man. "Do you have a job?" "Yes," said the troubled man. "I have a job with a good salary." "Are you married?" "Yes, and my wife and I get along well. She is very good to me." "Well, where do you live?" the psychiatrist asked, thinking maybe the man's neighbors were causing his problems. "Oh," he said, "I have 3 homes," the man answered, "and all of them are in very lovely neighborhoods. My neighbors are extremely friendly to me." So the psychiatrist was perplexed. For several hours, the psychiatrist questioned the man. At last, he said, "You have everything you could wish for. There's only one thing I know to recommend in your case. For the rest of this week, there is a clown in town who is entertaining the people each evening at the city hall. He is the funniest man I ever saw. I was there last night, and I was almost sick from laughing so much. I don't think anyone could be around this clown and feel depressed. Buy a ticket and go see him tonight. I know you will feel better." As the psychiatrist spoke, a strange, haunted look came into the troubled man's eyes. With an effort, he faltered. But you don't understand. I can't go. The psychiatrist couldn't understand why his words had caused his patient such deep distress. Why can't you go? Because I am that clown, came the reply of the voice of despair. So, you know, he was making people laugh, and people got sick from laughing at him. But he was the unhappiest man there was. So there's a lot of difference. The point I want to bring out in mourning and being happy, there's a lot of difference. Happy isn't laughing. I think that he brings out here the fact that the psychiatrist made the mistake that the laughter and happiness were the same thing. They are far from it. It is very possible that the person who laughs too much and too loudly may be trying to forget or cover up the emptiness in his life, the loneliness, the frustration of his inner self. And yet, surely, is not always a sign of unhappiness. Is it not meant to be an expression of joy, of pleasant feeling and emotions? And all that, is all laughing wrong? Then he goes on to say the story about his him where they were visiting. It says in, but why should we be, you know, Jesus said, blessed are they that mourn. But in the New Testament, there's so many. The Bible says, the prophet Isaiah said, he would greatly rejoice in the Lord. Isaiah 6:1-10. And the apostle Peter wrote of the believers rejoicing with joy unspeakable and full of glory. 1 Peter 1:8 and 1 Thessalonians 5:16. We are commanded to rejoice evermore. A Christian has 1,000 more reasons to be happy than has anyone else. And quiet laughter can be suitable at times and circumstances befitting the expression of that joy and happiness. And then he goes on and says that in Jesus mourned at times. Jesus wept over Jerusalem. And the Apostle Paul said he had a great heaviness and a continual sorrow in his heart because of his concern for his Jewish kinsmen. John R. W. Stott wrote in an article that when should a Christian weep? And says, I believe that we should laugh less and cry more. That we were more Christian, we certainly be more sorrowful, and we must reject the form of Christian life as all smiles and no tears. The eyes that do not weep are blind eyes, eyes closed to the fact of sin and of suffering and in ourselves. Then the last thing he wrote in conclusion, let us not forget that we must have great reason to rejoice, for God, by his great grace, has given us the two most priceless possessions of peace of mind and hope of heaven. So we have more to rejoice than most people. And I believe it's so. We can see by the life of Jesus that he was at times, he was mournful. He was sad about how things happened, what had happened. And I think I'll stop there before I go into the next one. We don't have enough time going to the next one. So I believe that there was another verse that I had, and I can't find it. Here it is. First Peter 2:21-25. I want to read that in closing. First Peter 2:21-25. thinking about this, especially thinking of having communion this evening. For even hereunto were we called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judges righteously. Who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sin, should live unto righteousness, and by whose stripes we were healed. For ye were as sheep going astray, but now are returned unto the shepherd and bishop of your souls. And that's, when I think of blessed are ye that mourn, we think of the one that said that and experienced that and taught us how to do it. Let's stand.